I just had my clothes surgically attached to my body. If they got out, I might never be president. I'm already naked, under my clothes. Not even if you were all three Jonas Brothers. I have a rash. I have nudophobia. I have lizard skin. The more you ask, the less I want to. You're not the boss of me. Nudity makes me vomit. I'm a vampire, so I don't show up in pictures anyways. Your badgering has really killed the mood.
When someone is pressuring you to do something you don't want to, how many ways can you say no before they get the message? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa.
Taking care of business and working overtime.
With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
Well, for those of you who are complaining out there that we're just not seeing enough real volatility in the market, well, you've got your wish. And Friday and today, you get a little taste of what volatility actually is. Now, it's kind of unusual. If you listen to so-called trading or Wall Street professionals, they often complain that they need more volatility in order to be efficient as traders. And I kind of understand that. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see exactly what the definition of these short-term events, Friday and Monday, really are. As a financial services professional who actually remembers the crash of 1987, we remember that in that particular environment, you had a two-day event. We called it Black Friday and Black Monday. As percentages, interestingly, seemingly, we literally saw at some point the market actually today declined about 1,500 points on the Dow. The market volatility we saw back in 87 was about a third of that in points, but in percentages, it was a minus 22, a little over minus 22%. This move in this environment is very, very small. As a matter of fact, in the S&P 500, it really represents only, it's between 4 and 5% and really closer to 4. Now, breaking the early lows of the day means that the correction, if that's what we're having here, if this is a pull, the question people are asking all over the place now, is this a pullback, which Don Soa and my colleagues here on Money Talk have been talking about for probably a year or more. And the idea that we have had periods over this last decade, from really 2009 to where we are right now, we've had years in which the market finished in high single digit, low double digit range at year end after having experienced more than one, maybe two pullbacks. A pullback being a market decline from the high that is slightly less than 10%. It could be a 3 to 5 or 6% pullback, and we use that term to describe the event itself. If the market drops more than 10%, it's a correction, and as we've many times said, if it drops more than 20, it's a bear market. Now, I would be reluctant to suggest that a drop of 20% that happened in a matter of a couple of days and then went through a period of either stabilizing or rebounding, I would be reluctant to call that a bear market, even though it qualifies on percentages. I would say that it was a sizable correction and always qualify that and tell you how much it dropped. Because to me, a bear market is a market. It is a trend. It is a phase within the market's condition that oftentimes lasts a period of time. And it lasts a lengthy period of time because it is reflective of a weakness in the overall economy. It could be a recessionary environment that we're in at that particular period in time. It could be a hyperinflationary environment, which is causing unto itself the economy to slow down. But anyway, the S&P 500 did pull back about 4.1%, being a more important number, interestingly, than the Dow. The Dow represents only 30 companies. The S&P 500 represents how many? Yes. Maya's nodding. She says, yes, 500, Don. Thank you, Maya. Well, the broad index had traded positive earlier in the day today. Interestingly enough, I mean, these things are all down in the overnight markets where if you look at the futures contracts, you can kind of get a sense. Many online services will even say there is an implied opening of a certain amount. And we were seeing triple digits for implied openings, triple negative digits. But as we mentioned a moment ago, the S&P actually was trading higher. More, as a matter of fact, traded down at some levels early on in the day. But, you know, ultimately the markets were up and down. It was like a little bit of a roller coaster. The S&P had traded down more than 5% from an all-time high set last month and then broke below its 50-day moving average, which is a key technical level. Now, these moving averages are important because there are elements in the world of trading that have nothing to do with you and I as individual investors, or even some professionals who are sitting there at their Quotrons or their computer screens and making a phone call or typing in a trade. In other words, where they're making a deliberate decision as to what to buy, what to sell, and at what price and at what time. When you start dealing with moving averages, now you're dealing with algorithms. You're dealing with computers that have specific numbers plugged into them based on a formula that will determine what to buy, whether it's individual securities or whether it's some sort of an index to buy the index or to sell, and at what levels to do that. They're triggers. They're computer triggers. We actually saw what a problem those early stage, perhaps less sophisticated algorithmic trading programs, what they actually did to the market back in 1987. That was a particular part of the program. It was sort of like a snowball effect, whereas the market dropped, it kept hitting every 4 to 5% level, hitting a trigger, and that would again cause a sell, and then the selling piggybacking on the one previous to that would force it to hit another trigger. It would go on and on and on. And when they went in the week that followed, and I'm sure even the regulators and people from the New York Stock Exchange are asking traders, would you have sold this particular stock? Would you have sold this sector or this index if the decision had been solely up to you and your analysts as opposed to being set off automatically by these computer triggers? And they said that more than 60% of the time that the analyst's response was, no, if we had had some control over that buying and selling program beyond what we setting the initial parameters, if we had had more control, we probably wouldn't have continued or even engaged in a great deal of that selling. And what came out of that was the regulators and the exchanges stepped in to put in their own version of little stop losses in place that would prevent the markets from just running into a free fall type situation. Instead, market trading would be halted at some percentage level. Say if the market drops 7%, it would be halted. It would be halted for a period of time, whether it's 15 minutes or so, whatever particular number was, but halted for a period of time, which would allow hopefully saner, calmer, cooler heads to look in and see what is happening, to see whether adjustments should be made. And if the market continues to drop from that point when they reopen trading, then it would have a second trigger, maybe 12 or 13%. Now, with all of that said, as soon as the market broke below the most recent 50-day moving average, we also saw a spike in volatility, which is measured on our standard by the VIX or the volatility index. It really was just sort of downhill on today's trading from that point. And we did see it bouncing up and down over the course of the day. Now, the NASDAQ composite declined about 3.8%, not as much as the blue chips, the Dow or the S&P, but after rising as much as a 0.5% earlier on in the day. So it's interesting, the NASDAQ, which is heavily weighted in the technology sector, was actually in positive territory, moving towards a gain of 1% for the day, before it turned around and finished up not quite 4% below, but at 3.8. Many of the earlier gains were based upon upside evaluation and news for some of the bigger players like Amazon and Apple, two of the members of the FANG stocks. And they're so large in terms of their market cap and what they represent to any index, including the NASDAQ, that they do, based upon their strength, have the ability to keep the market from sliding too much. But we're not really used to getting washouts like this anymore. So the buy, the dip mentality that has really taken over really hasn't allowed for that typically. So this particular sell-off today and Friday in the bigger scheme of things is really not a very big move in the market, really. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But it is very important to understand that there's a psychology to it. And we certainly on this program talk enough about the psychology of money and well, socioeconomics. In other words, how does how we feel affect the market and the economy? And we'll talk about that here on Money Talk. This is AM 790, your home of talking business. I'm Don Sowa. I'll be right back.
Sponsored by United States Traffic Network. Looking to add your talent to a dynamic company? United States Traffic Network seeks a motivated account executive to join the sales team. Send your resume to ustrafficnetwork.com/careers.
Gets it to Okoli. Oak, two on the shot clock. He's going to have to fire it inside mid-court. It's the three!
Count it.
This is Mike Martin, Brown Bears men's basketball coach in class of 2004. I would like to invite you all to the Pizzatola Center this season to see our exciting young team compete against our Ivy League rivals. Join us as we take on Columbia Saturday, February 10th at 6 p.m.
Hunsaker, shot at the buzzer. Yeah! Bears win it!
Brown versus Columbia presented by Mohegan Sun. Visit brownbears.com for game and ticket information.
The skills you can develop as a soldier in the Army National Guard can give you an edge in the high-tech job market of tomorrow. The Guard offers career training to take advantage of your skills in science, technology, engineering, and math that can help give you a leg up to a high-paying and rewarding STEM profession. Get a head start on your career while earning money to pay for college. Log on to NationalGuard.com to learn about all of the STEM career opportunities in the Army National Guard.
Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
Eric was way behind on his taxes.
I owed a lot of money to the IRS, almost $15,000. I tried to make payments.
The IRS wasn't satisfied with Eric's efforts, so they came after him full force.
They're coming to put a lien and a hold on all my income, my home, my car. I was just overwhelmed at what to do.
Then Eric called Optima Tax Relief.
When Optima Tax got involved, the calls would stop, the threats would stop. It was easy, like, one, two, three.
Optima Tax Relief is A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau, and their team of expert tax professionals took care of Eric's problem.
I owe $15,000, and now my debt is clean. I don't owe anything.
Take Eric's advice.
If you have a tax problem, you need to call Optima Tax now.
Call Optima Tax Relief for a free consultation. Call 800-559-8226. 800-559-8226. 800-559-8226.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
Welcome to the Maya Miguel Challenge. Meet Maya and the gang.
Oh, hi, I'm Maya.
Maya and her friends want you to get up and play, because it's always more fun to be active.
There's mountain biking, boating and fishing, mountain climbing and spelunking. Let's get started.
Get ready to take the Maya and Miguel Challenge.
Let's see.
Just go to letsmove.gov and look for Maya and Miguel. You'll find tons of fun activities that'll help keep you healthy and active. Muy activo. You can also check out healthy recipes to try with your family, play cool games, and get free downloads. So come hang out with Maya, Miguel, and the whole gang.
Go!
Remember, whether you play sports, run, dance, or jump in place, just get up and play at least an hour a day. And don't forget, eat healthy to be your best. Maya and Miguel will show you how at letsmove.gov. That's letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and the Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the Money Talk program, everybody. I am Don Sowa, delighted to have you with me during your drive time. You know, I know what you're thinking. You know, everybody looks at these markets. And part of what we're going to discuss on tonight's program is whether or not this is a major move to the downside that you as an investor should be concerned about, or whether this is actually a buying opportunity, which we've been hearing from a number of people over the course of this weekend as well as today. Stocks were pressured by a pretty fast rise in interest rates last week. The benchmark 10-year yield rose to its highest level that we've seen in about 4 years now. It reached about 2.88% overnight in the 10-year U.S. Treasury before trading settling in right around 2.75. Now, the major indexes also capped their worst weekly performance in 2 years on Friday. The Dow and the S&P pulled back about 4.1% and 3.9% respectively. The NASDAQ was down about 3.5%. Now, what we noted in January was that stocks and bond yields wanted to run through their year-end targets. There's a lot of momentum behind them to start off 2018. Now, that's according to some notes from John Augustine, who is an investment officer with Huntington Private Bank. and he was being interviewed by the folks over at CNBC. Now, he believes that both markets just really need to take a breather. The market has been running seemingly, although it really isn't true if you look close enough. But if you step back and look at this period of 8 or 9 years, it seems to have been moving unabated, grinding higher each and every year. Huntington Private Bank has also noted these pullbacks in bonds and stocks should be viewed by the majority of investors as buying opportunities. Now, we'll explain for whom that is not true and for whom it might be. Now, stocks began the new year this year ripping higher based upon some expectation having the U.S. government having passed a tax bill, in the way the tax bill was being sold to the public, in the way Wall Street was interpreting the potential that could come out of a successfully passed tax bill. The problem is that most of the benefits or lack thereof, so most of the benefits or the problems of this tax bill are not going to be obvious immediately. The tax bill, even the Republicans who are involved in some of the fashioning of it, admit that it is front-end loaded. In other words, there are some benefits, especially the ones for the lower and middle-income worker or taxpayer. Actually, I'm going to say worker because some of them are not taxpayers at all. But some of the benefits from them that go to lower and middle-income households are going to be part of this year's tax return. It's for 2017, but it's going to be paid out, obviously, when you file your taxes here at the beginning of 2018. The real issue, unfortunately, is that the benefit that you see, including maybe getting a little bit more money in your take-home pay when you get your paycheck. There was one particular case where a woman was touted. She had answered a survey. She was a school teacher in the Midwest. And I guess as part of the survey, she had noticed that that she had derived a benefit, had just received her first paycheck in 2018. And there was a small benefit to that. And that, this and that. What they found out when they interviewed her more fully was that she was receiving an extra $1.50 in her paycheck. And they said, well, will this change your life now? At the time they asked in the questionnaire, will it change your life? She hadn't mentioned that the amount she was receiving was $1.50. So she said, well, it'll change my life. It'll allow me probably to cover my Costco annual membership. As it turns out, the amount she was receiving, like I said, annually was a little bit between $60 and $70 a year. I'm not really sure that's the sort of thing that will change your life. Many of you might say, geez, if I had an extra $60 or $70, I might be able to go out maybe a couple of Friday nights in a row for fish and chips or something at my favorite restaurant. But it's not really going to make, it's not going to change your life. It's not going to change your personal activities. There are a great many people who might have received a bonus up front. They're talking about the companies, corporations out there that are paying out those $500 or $1,000 bonuses. Well, to make them work ideally, anytime there's a bonus structure built into some sort of a fiscal plan, the expectation to sell the concept is that those people now are, it enhances their ability to be an active consumer, that they can go out now with that extra $1,000 and buy things as consumers. And if you're buying things, that means the price or the demand for goods and services can go up as a result. And with that, possibly means payrolls at the manufacturing level or the retail level, payrolls can go higher. Certainly, it enhances profitability and the economy grows from there, knowing that, consumers are a very large percentage of the U.S. population, of the U.S. economy. But that said, what they did find in the past, whenever we've done anything that represents a fiscal plan, such as cash for clunkers, or even something that was a little more economy-based, such as creating an environment where gasoline or oil prices dropped dramatically from over $100 a barrel down below $50 a barrel. Everybody touted that as a major tax cut, right? And that would mean the average individual had a lot more money in their pockets. It meant also that because the cost of gasoline at the pump was going to be considerably lower. Now, what they thought, again, would be that the people would take that extra money and go out to dinner and buy clothes and do stuff and do traveling. And, well, maybe there was a little bit of that, but even the cases where people admitted to having, you know, saved up because of the ability to save with this extra money in their pockets. It was a short-lived issue. Most people, after they've had that one-time, hey, let's reward myself type mindset, they ended up taking the money and doing things that actually a financial planner would recommend they do, which is to either build up a cash reserve, build up an emergency fund, because many lower and middle income people, admittedly, based on surveys we've seen, haven't been doing that. They don't have a lot of cash. They are, as a matter of fact, one person said to me, he said, the average American, let alone people in the lower middle income category, the average American is about three months away from bankruptcy, meaning that they don't have a lot of savings. And if they were suddenly to lose their job, the average term to find a new job or something suitable or comparable was in that period of time about 3 months. That average probably goes up a little bit now. Some people have solved the problem by not getting one job but working two jobs to try to make up for the one they lost. But ultimately, in the end, if they had had a nest egg, an emergency fund, equal to maybe 3 years of fixed, 3 months of fixed expenses, which is what most planners recommend, then they would be in a far better position to not only make decent decisions, but also to hold out for the appropriate job, not just the first one that comes along. The other thing that a great many consumers did, or even back in those periods when suddenly there was a little more cash on hand, was they started paying down their debt rather aggressively, which I also, as a planner, think is pretty wise. Taking expensive debt, such as credit cards, car loans, student loans, and others, things other than just your mortgage, and actually paying those things off as rapidly as you can, knowing that, number one, it gives you a major psychological relief not to have that debt, that burden, you know, out there, running the risk of possibly losing your car or something else. But then they also were able to engage in strategies where they could more aggressively put money against their mortgages, which again would mean that instead of having another 10 or 12 years to go before the mortgage is paid off, maybe they can pay the thing off in 7 years by putting more money against the principal. But again, these are financial planning strategies. Consumers, we had to give a lot more credit than some people would normally, but they didn't go out and simply spend the money because they had it. Now, I mentioned that the stock market started off this year rip-roaring, and that's because the momentum that the market was experiencing from last year was carrying over into this year. And even though the real impact of potential tax reform is probably not going to be felt for a while, and I'm saying both good impact and negative impact, it takes time for any changes in fiscal or monetary policy to find its way into the actual economy. But regardless of how you looked at it, it was viewed as positive news. The Dow and the S&P 500 had their best monthly gains since March of 2016. That was the month of January this year. The NASDAQ posted its biggest one-month gain since October of 2015. So they all broke through to record highs. Now, the stock market or equities markets benefited from strong economic data and solid corporate earnings growth at the start of the year, and some expectations, some speculation, pushed market prices higher as well. But increasing inflation concerns have actually sent interest rates higher recently, according to Wall Street. And the White House repeatedly touted the stock market's rally last month when asked about the market's current sell-off. Of course, officials at the White House said, they are always concerned when the market loses any value, but we are also confident in the economy's fundamentals. Again, the president, it's sort of like living by the sword and dying by the sword. He touted it and, you know, was taking credit for a rather substantial move in the stock market last year in the beginning of this year. But now that all of a sudden we have experienced at very least what may be described as a pullback right now anyway, obviously I think the White House and the president are going to be reluctant to assume that they should take any of the blame or carry any of the responsibility. Now, in the second half of tonight's show, I'm going to talk about, again, the environment that we're in right now. Is what we're experiencing here last Friday and this today, is this simply a market pullback or a correction? Or is it the start of a bear market? We'll talk about the definitions. We'll explain our opinions on all those elements, and maybe even tell you how to take advantage of it if you choose to. This is Money Talk on AM 790. I'm Don Sowa. Stick around. I'll be right back.
Start the fun. Start the excitement. It's the Northeast International Auto Show
at the Rhode Island Convention Center, Friday, February 9th through the 11th.
Start your imagination.
Check out over 250 of the hottest new cars, new trucks, and SUVs.
Come see the ultra-exotic car collection,
courtesy of the Audrain Automobile Museum, DuPont Registry, and Ferrari Maserati of New England. These are some of the coolest cars on the planet. See pre-production models.
And it's all displayed in a non-selling environment.
You can even test drive vehicles from Toyota, Chrysler, Dodge, Fiat, Jeep, and Ram truck. And every day is family day. All kids 12 and under get in free. Every attendee gets a free 12-month subscription to Motor Trend.
The Northeast International Auto Show is where the excitement starts.
The 9th through the 11th at the Rhode Island Convention Center. Go to ProvidenceAutoShow.com for discounts. This auto show is presented by the Rhode Island Automobile Dealers Association and is produced by Motor Trend, so you know it's going to be good. Come for the cars, stay for the fun.
Tune in every Tuesday afternoon at 4 p.m. on AM 790 for the locally produced IROM Today, the Property Management Show, presented by the Institute of Real Estate Management, Rhode Island, Chapter 88, hosted by Jason Martins. IROM Today is a live call-in show with discussion of property management issues. Special guests from all trades and programs will add insight and direction. If you missed the show, catch the podcast at 790business.com 24/7. The Property Management Show, every Tuesday on AM 790, your station for talk and business.
Miracle Method has the answer to your ugly tubs, tile, and countertops. It's called refinishing. Whether a surface is worn out, damaged, hard to clean, or simply the wrong color, Miracle Method has the refinishing solutions to make it look and feel like new in just a couple of days at a fraction of the cost of messy remodeling. Call Miracle Method today at 401-751-0487 or log on to miraclemethod.com or just swing by the showroom to see our work and what we can do for you.
Hi, my name's Bob.
Hi, Bob.
So I see this ad on TV. It says I can reduce my debt by 50%. So I call. They told me to stop paying my bills, stop talking to my creditors. It didn't seem right, but they said they'd take care of everything.
I gave them thousands of dollars, but most of it went to their fees.
Getting out of debt is neither quick nor easy. There are those who will tell you anything just to win your trust.
Sounded perfect. I did everything they told me to do.
They never paid my creditors. They didn't even contact them.
Turns out I'm even more in debt because the fees and the interest on my cards kept piling up.
Bad advice from so-called experts can make your financial situation worse.
And the bank turned me down for a mortgage. And that's when I realized my credit was shot. I should have gone straight to my creditors to begin with.
There is a better way to get help. Talk to your creditors directly, or to find a nonprofit agency near you, visit debtadvice.org. Debtadvice.org. Real solutions for real people. This has been a public service message.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to this half of the Money Talk program, starting out on a really bumpy yet, I know, interesting period of time. If the market were to go simply straight up or straight down, it would be at best boring, if not nerve-wracking. Stocks stopped going straight up just this past week or so. It's seemingly it was shooting for the moon. The question will be, I guess at this stage, since the market has shown that it does have an inclination to adjust, shall we say, let some steam off, which you could describe as what happened on Friday and today. The question is, will everybody freak out? Now, there are going to be some people who, by their very nature, will overreact because that's what their very nature is. They probably should, and you know, we're very careful in the world of client service money management when you work with individuals. Managing other people's money is much different than simply managing your own. Managing my own behavior, how I react to things. My colleague Steve Beauvais used to say when a client or anybody would say, Steve, why don't you tell me what you're doing with your money, and I'll just put my money where your money is. And Steve would look at him with this little quizzical look and say, I'll tell you what. If you sign a contract promising me that you will react to the market exactly the way I react to the market, whether it's going up or down, you make that promise, then I will advise you as to what I'm buying and what I'm selling in my own account and when I do it. So the timing, the dollar amount, and the direction that you want to go in. Steve's premise is that he invests in a manner that is unique to himself. And that doesn't mean that it's not a philosophy you follow with as a professional advisor. What he means is you've got to know yourself. Your financial advisor has got to know enough about you, your personality, your mindset, your temperament, your ability to tolerate risk. Very importantly, now, some of the things that are a part of that is having a solid understanding of what your financial goals really are and what your time frame is. You're hearing the advice already right now. There are people asking on radio and television and elsewhere, among whenever there's an expert, as they say, on there, says, well, what should we be doing right now? And the answer is, for the vast majority of individuals who are invested in a hopefully diversified portfolio in the market, so yes, you have some money in the stock market and the bond market, and maybe some alternative investments as well, commodities and the like. If you are invested and you have a proper asset allocation model that reflects who you are and what your goals are, and part of what your goals are, as I said, means knowing when you are going to need the money. And I don't mean the age at which you're going to retire, because if you tell me you're going to retire at age 65 or 70, and I assume for sake of discussion that you live to be 100. Now, why do I say that? Because that's the insurance industry or actuaries' definition of whole life. Because they, like me, we don't know how long you're going to live. So let's pick a date that some of you will live to reasonably. And that's the age 100. So with that said, and you say to me, well, I love my work and I'm going to continue, but when I retire at age 70, I'm going to need to look at what my options are to generate a monthly income to support the lifestyle you were hoping for in retirement. Now, if you're going to retire at 70, and again, I have to use a target of 100, that means we have to accommodate a plan that will allow for the amount of income you're going to need and allow for sufficiently safeguarding the money machine we call your principal. We're going to have to allow for that to accommodate you for 30 years. So that gives us a pretty decent sense of one element of the risks that you have to manage, that we have to manage. And then, of course, other risks that we have to manage will, of course, be the environment we're in. Yes, we look at the economy. We look at what's happening day to day. We look at reasonable expectations for future economic conditions based upon the political environment we're in. Yes, that matters too. We try to downplay it a little bit because of what we can't guarantee, but we have to allow for it too. Politics does affect, even if it doesn't ultimately affect the economy, it affects our perception of it, and that can change things along the way. That's just a couple of elements of risk. The markets themselves, yes, the condition of the market. How expensive is it? People will say, oh, are we like we were back in the first quarter of the year 2000, having just gone through the extraordinary 90s? Remember the dot-com bubble with all the tech stocks in the 90s from 90 through 99 were kind of going through the roof? And depending upon how you're invested, you could have been up, who knows, anywhere from 15 to 19% per year for that decade, only to follow the following decade with a almost 0% return from 2000 to 2009. Now, granted, during the decade of the 2000s, yes, some of the years did make money. Absolutely they did. But the down years, 2000, 2001, 2002, and then maybe throw in 2008 along the way, all part of that decade, you could have averaged out. You could have, depending on how, again, how you were allocated, how aggressive your investments were, you could have very easily done a zero return for that entire decade, where in the previous decade, 90 through 99, you might have had an 18% annual return. But you know the cool thing, thinking of the stock market like it's a person that wants to go somewhere, has an actual set of goals, a person that feels something, It's like the market wants to be balanced. It wants to have some level of equilibrium. So by having a decade of zero returns on average, again, average, in the first decade of high teens returns, which was an aberration by any reasonable standard, the market adjusted in the 2000s. The average return from the year 1990 through 2009, that 20-year period, the average return turns out to be about 9%, very close to the long-term historic average that we had become accustomed to. So the markets are fairly efficient. Now, what it meant was that if you were an investor over that period of time and you had the time, that 20 years, then regardless of what happened in the 90s, and then regardless of how bad things were in the 2000s, guess what? You ended up looking back at that 20 years that you were, maybe you were investing in a 401k plan or some sort of a retirement plan or just some sort of an investment portfolio of your own. You sold some real estate and you had some cash. But if your time frame was 20 years, at which point you would eventually have to start thinking about using the money for something, then you were very successful and the market worked beautifully for you. Now, here we are now. We've just had an extraordinary period from what? Yes, you had the terrible bear market condition of 08, which was created by a number of factors, including outrageous debt in the system, people highly leveraging investments that shouldn't have been leveraged, or people that shouldn't have been leveraging, shall we say. And, of course, a recession in 07 and 08. It's not unusual that a bear market accompanies a recession. So, yes, we watch the economy. That's why I mentioned one of the risks you deal with as an investor, especially as you get close to retirement, is the economy. Now, another thing you've got to factor in, and we'll talk about this later, is the risks that you as a person represent. But anyway, last week the Dow lost almost 1,100 points, while the S&P 500 gave up more than 100. That's a decline of about 4% during that period of time. Now, these are some of the worst individual trading days, short-term trading weeks, since the Brexit sell-off they had back in June of 2016. Do you remember that? Most of you probably don't. You know, the term sounds familiar, but you don't remember the numbers, I'm sure. But it was a big deal, and people, yes, there were some people freaking out. And yes, on this program, we had to do the same thing that we're doing now, telling you why things happen, why did these things happen, and whether these are things that you should be deeply concerned about. Is the fallout of what happened on Friday and today going to continue on through the week? We were asking the questions back then. The questions are reasonably being asked again now. Now, the European markets, the Asian markets, the overnight markets, and the U.S. stocks did fall today on the Monday. The volatility index, which had nested right in comfortably around 10, which is a very, very low number, showing very little volatility, was trading closer to 17. So that's a move. It's not an ultimately really high move for volatility, but it's, hey, guess what? It's 70% higher than 10, right? Everyone was quick to name a culprit. Rising yields for the 10-year Treasury notes and the whiff of perhaps maybe wage inflation that could come with this as the Fed raises interest rates and the open market raises interest rates. The Dow lost about 666 points on Friday, as if Mephistopheles himself, you may not know who that is, but if you look at the ancient philosophers, it was collecting on the devil's bargain. Let's all take a deep breath. Maybe that's the first thing in our answer here on Money Talk to you. What should we do, Don? You're calling out Maya. Maya, what should we do? And Maya's saying, well, send me your money. I will take care of it. Don't send Maya your money. She's a nice lady, but that's probably not a good idea. As many commentators have noted, this market was way overdue for some sort of a pullback or a correction, possibly. I'm not going to spell how aggressive it should be, because how aggressive it would be is going to be based on how people feel, which is hard to judge, isn't it? It's much healthier than, by the way, continuing some parabolic level of increase in share prices and then having a correction from a much, much higher level. Now, how much inflation are we really talking about? And by how much will the new Fed chair, Jerome Powell, how much will he and the Open Market Committee raise rates? Has anything in the global economy fundamentally changed from a month ago? You know, not really much. When you look at it that way, this appears to be a pretty normal market adjustment and not the beginning of a new bear market in stocks. Not yet. Well, we'll give you a different side to that and maybe how to take advantage of this, possibly, when I come back from this next brief break. I'm Don Sowa. You're listening to the Money Talk program. It's AM 790. By the way, if you have a call, maybe we can squeeze you in at 437-5000 or 888-345-0790. This is Money Talk.
Sponsored by Tax Doctor. Owe the IRS $10,000 or more? Call the Tax Doctor to settle tax debt for less. 800-542-9112. 800-542-9112.
Can you tell if the surfaces in this kitchen are crawling with bacteria that could cause chronic arthritis? Listen. You can't see it either. Wash surfaces, utensils, and hands with soapy water while preparing food, especially when handling raw meats or eggs. Raw food may contain bacteria that can make you very sick. Or worse. Roughly 3,000 Americans will die from food poisoning this year, but you can keep your family safer. Check your steps at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Eric was way behind on his taxes.
I owed a lot of money to the IRS, almost $15,000. I tried to make payments.
The IRS wasn't satisfied with Eric's efforts, so they came after him full force.
They're coming to put a lien and a hold on all my income, my home, my car. I was just overwhelmed at what to do.
Then Eric called Optima Tax Relief.
When Optima Tax got involved, the calls would stop, the threats would stop. It was easy, like 1, 2, 3.
Optima Tax Relief is A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau, and their team of expert tax professionals took care of Eric's problem.
I owe $15,000, and now my debt is clean. I don't owe anything.
Take Eric's advice.
If you have a tax problem, you need to call Optima Tax now.
Call Optima Tax Relief for a free consultation. Call 800-559-8226. 800-559-8226. 800-559-8226.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
At Kessler Foundation, we improve quality of life for people with brain and spinal cord injury, MS, stroke, and other disabling conditions. Our discoveries help people reclaim the ability to walk, drive, remember, and communicate, skills needed for greater independence. Explore how Kessler Foundation changes the lives of people with disabilities at KesslerFoundation.org. That's KesslerFoundation.org. Discoveries that change lives.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Hi there, this is Don Sowa. Welcome back to the Money Talk program. Now, in the beginning of the show, we talked about how big a number and how scary a number a move of 1,000 points can be. But you got to remember, 1,000 points from where? How about 26,616 was the closing high on January the 28th, at the end of January, in other words, about a week ago. So even a small percentage drop in a number from 26,000, do you realize if the market were to drop a full-blown correction, which would be 10%, that would be 2,700 points, folks. So that's not the kind of numbers we're talking about. And even 10% corrections are actually normal in the normal cycle of the markets. So back in October of 87, we called it the Great Crash, Black Friday, Black Monday. The Dow lost 508 points, about a third of what we saw in the last couple of days here, which at that time was a 22.6% drop. That's not what it is here. A 4% weekly decline in stocks isn't unusual, unless you were to have several of them in a row, and I don't think anybody's really talking about that at this stage. 4.1% official unemployment rate. That's another thing. And 200,000 new jobs added in January speak to the U.S. economy's underlying strength. In last week's jobs report, average hourly wages rose 2.9% year over year, above the 2.6% increase economists were actually expecting. So, a little more than average. That was the fastest wage growth that we've seen since 2009. It was widely viewed as another sign that the labor market is tightening, which could cause this economy to deal with stresses related to inflation and wage inflation. But it's only 1 month. So far, wage growth hasn't moved the core consumer price index, or CPI, which has been stuck at around 1.8% annual growth for the past 8 months. Now, we'll see what happens when the next report is published on Valentine's Day. Now, even if core inflation hits the Fed's 2% target, remember, the Fed wants some inflation. The economy has to grow. That's what inflation is. When the economy is not growing, it's a recession. I don't see the central bank stepping up its pace of rate increases really very much. This new chair, Powell, has really been in lockstep with his predecessor, Janet Yellen's, policies of gradual rate increases throughout her four-year term. So he's not likely to change his spots as a leopard. He also believes in pretty solid transparency. So the kind of the way he will speak as he represents the Open Market Committee, he'll probably be a believer in giving us a reasonable heads up of what the Fed's policies really are. We're looking for 4-quarter-point increases in the Fed fund rate this year, 2018. That's about what most people do expect. A few people have mentioned 3%. But that would actually put the Fed fund rate at only about 2.25% to 2.5% by the end of the year. This is worth panicking about? I don't think so. It's still historically low, folks, and I believe the market will adjust to it very nicely. This is the whole issue here. Rising interest rates are not great if they rise quickly and if they rise aggressively. If they move up in a stable, reasonable fashion, then they're not going to collapse the bond market and they're not going to have a follow-up effect that is negative on the stock market. The 10-year Treasury yield of 2.85% has been creeping up since really hitting its all-time low back in July of 2016. It was at a 1.37 at the time. So it's more than doubled. Investors sell longer-dated Treasuries. As they do that, they actually drive yields higher. But it still hasn't really topped its five-year high of 3.03%, which was back in 2013. Now, we can start worrying about a potential bear market in the bond market when it closes above that level and stays there above like 3.03 to 3.1%. Again, we are watching for that. I don't see it happening, at least not in the short term. In the meantime, we're in a sort of synchronized global economic recovery. This is something we've got to realize. The U.S. is a little ahead of the scale of Europe and Asia. We've talked about that here on the program. If you use the baseball analogy, we're in about the seventh inning of this movement, of this game, and the international markets are about the fourth to fifth inning. So they've got a little bit more of a ways to go. So that may be a reason to encourage some of you to look at your portfolios here at the beginning of the year, maybe even your 401k or your 403b, and add a little bit of the choices in your plan that give you some exposure to the global markets ex-US, specifically Western Europe and the Asia-Pacific markets. I'm not really enamored right now of Latin America for a lot of reasons, but I think Asia-Pacific and Western Europe are probably places that you might want to have some of your money in. Don't get crazy with this. It's going to be a piece of the equity portion of your plan. And if you're going to be 60% in stocks, for example, or 65% in stocks, then having 15 or 20% outside the U.S. is not a bad allocation to have. In the short term, the things that really drive stock prices, interest rates, earnings, and economic growth, they all look pretty good right now. Matter of fact, they look really good. If not quite as ideal as they did a short while ago, the only problem we're having right now is negative news coming out of the media. And that's not by fault or by design. That's just that the media tends to quote people, all of whom have opinions, including Don Soa. Last Monday, Sam Stovall, who was chief investment strategist with CFRA, he prophetically noted that the S&P had gone 564 calendar days since its last decline of at least 5%. Longer than any period since 1945. This market was ripe for some sort of a pullback, period, full stop. It happened because it should happen. How long will it go? Who knows? I'd say, ultimately, who knows? It's hard to say. It could go, if it's multiple pullbacks, maybe 5% and then maybe 7%. Who knows? We could see that. We don't have to have a 10 or 15% correction, but we could. But your guess is probably as good as mine because a lot of it has to do with the economy and a lot of it has to do with our behavior. Now, if you are investing in a 401k or a 403b plan, you are doing something called dollar cost averaging. You've got money coming right out of your paycheck in your, based on your pay schedule, like every 2 weeks, say, and it goes right into the plan and is split up in the allocations you've chosen inside your plan. Now, let's just say if we were doing it all into just one fund, let's say it was one stock index that represented the total market. And let's say the share price, remember, you're investing in a share price in a plan like that. So let's say the share price was $10 a share. If all of a sudden the that if the market just continued to go higher and higher and higher, at some point the share price would go up. Let's say that it doubled over time. It would go from $10 a share up to $20 a share. If you were putting in $100 per pay period at $10 a share, basically you're buying 10 shares. Now remember, you're trying to accumulate shares in your plan. You want a larger ownership interest in this program. That's what investing does. So you're buying 10 shares at $10 a share. Now let's say it doubles in value. The share price rises. What's going to happen? Well, yeah, the value of your existing shares that you already own are going up. Well, that's great. I love that. But what's also happening is that you are adding new money each and every pay period. And if the new money that you're going in stays at $100 going in, but now the share price goes up to $20 a share from 10, now you're only buying 5 shares of the fund that you've chosen. The other side of this works the other way. Let's say for sake of argument, you're buying $100 worth at $10 a share. That's 10 shares. Let's say the market drops instead of goes up. Let's use the simple math I'm giving you here. And it drops in half. Now the share price for your fund that you're buying with your new money is going to be $5 a share, not 10. Now all of a sudden your $100 is buying how many shares? 20, not 10. You're buying 20 shares. So the decrease in the share price because of a market adjustment, a market correction, or a bear market, whatever causes it, has pushed the price of the share you're buying down. But the share might ultimately own the same stocks of various companies that are out there. It's just now cheaper. So you are accumulating more shares when the market declines. So dollar cost averaging, the ideal of continuing to fund at an equal level the portfolio you've chosen over time, knowing that the share price will go up and the share price will go down, on average at the end of the process, when you get to whatever your target is, your retirement age or whatever, you're going to actually own more shares at what will ultimately be a higher price than you did if you just went in and put a big chunk of money as a lump sum in the plan. Now, rollovers are perfectly fine. Obviously, you'd like to do it at an ideal time. What a great many people are starting to suggest right now, and we'll find out how accurate they are in terms of their timing. They're suggesting that maybe what we've seen in the market on Friday and Monday so far, the last two trading days, you know, this move may simply mean a 4 or 5% off sale on some of the best companies that they could buy. So I imagine the people who are going to buy on dips here, the people who understand that this is a buy low, sell high opportunity, they're identifying what they want to buy today. And when they've decided it's hit the level that they're comfortable with and it's an ideal proposition, then they're going to go in and do their buying on the dip. You might want to think about that too. But if you're not, but you're in a 401k or 403b, just continue to dollar cost average your systematic investment into the plan you have and only make major changes if by chance your circumstances have changed, such as you're going to retire this summer. If that's the case, then you want to sit down with your financial advisor and rerun the numbers to make sure that you are in the proper allocation. Hey, folks, I'm Don Sowa. You've been listening to the Money Talk program. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in tomorrow evening at 5. My daughter and I, Donna Allard and myself, will be here for Get Back to Basics Tuesday on AM 790. This is Money Talk. Have a good night.
First off, you robots are a great addition to the accounting department.
But...